Let's jump right back in to the prophetic book of Hosea, chapter number 2. And I want to go to verse number 18 as our starting spot. Remember that this prophecy is happening in the last few years of northern Israel's history. Hosea's kids have grown up, and he's kind of told them, I believe, you got to intervene with your mom because I'm on the verge of kicking her out of the house and taking back all her stuff. And she's going to end up dying on her own if you don't reach out to her and beg her to change. Well, that becomes kind of the background for God to use Hosea to say to the people of Israel, you are on the verge of me divorcing you, kicking you out of the land, and it's going to end badly. But in the midst of it, as he often does, God provides a view of the future when through his gracious intervention, there will be the chance of salvation and of restoration of relationship. And so, as I said at the very close of last time, I believe what we're reading in this section of Hosea, chapter 2, verse 18, thereabouts, is parallel to what the New Testament says about Jesus betrothing through his death and his resurrection the people of Israel and of the Gentiles who put their faith in him, betrothing them as his bride-to-be. And that when he comes the second time, he will marry his church, made up of both Old Testament and New Testament saints, and they will live with him forever. So here's the wording in Hosea chapter 2, starting verse 18. I will make for them a covenant on that day with the beasts of the field, the birds of the heavens, and the creeping things of the ground. And I told you, I believe that is parallel to what we are reading elsewhere about peacefulness amongst the animals, going back to what it was like in Genesis chapters 1 and 2, where there was no fighting between the animals. There was no eating of animals by animals, because everybody was a vegetarian. And then there would also be peacefulness between the animals and people. And that peacefulness is, again, a return back to the early part of the book of Genesis before sin screwed everything up. Keep reading. Hosea 2, 18 continues, and I will abolish the bow, the sword, and war from the land. And I will make you lie down in safety. Now, when Hosea is writing this, there have been recent wars with the northern Israel and Syria attacking Judah, and Judah trying to defend itself, and then Assyria gets into the picture, and now Assyria is sweeping through the lower Middle East. It's just a mess. But the prediction is that at some point in the future, God is going to bring a time of peace and safety that is real and that lasts. Verse 19, I will betroth you to me forever. So I'm going to betroth you to me, I'm going to marry you, and you and I will always be together. That's what God promises. In the Old Testament, we think about God making this arrangement with Israel. That is all Israelis, not just simply northern Israel, but also Judah. So all Jewish people. But in the New Testament, we think about how Jesus is offering this to everybody that embraces his salvation. I will betroth you to me in righteousness. That's doing the right thing, being holy as he is holy. In justice, that's the idea of fairness. That is treating everybody the way God would treat them. In chesed, or steadfast love, is the way the English Standard Version translates chesed. This is all about God liking us and wanting what's best for us. and in mercy, that is, wanting to do better for us than what we deserve. And so that all these are the motivating factors for salvation, but it also changes us to bring us into alignment with the way God does stuff. And so this is a prediction of how things are going to turn out eventually. I will betroth you to me in faithfulness, and you shall know he who is. And knowing he who is, that gets brought up a lot in our literature, looking forward to the second coming of Jesus. In that day, so in this future time, which I think we are easily going to, we're going to find it much easier to refer to it as the millennium. Revelation chapter 20 is the only one that puts the number 1,000 on it. But the concept is quite a few places elsewhere in Scripture. So in that day, I'm going to say after Jesus comes back, in that day I will answer, declares he who is, I will answer the heavens and they shall answer the earth. And again, I believe this is the new heavens and the new earth in which righteousness dwells. And the earth shall answer the grain, the wine, and the oil, and they shall answer, God will so. Yes, it's the proper noun, Jezreel, the name of the city on the plains of Jezreel, but also the name of Hosea's oldest son. And it should be remembered, though, it's a verb form that predicts that God is the one that's doing the sowing. And if God is doing the sowing, it's going to be a good harvest. So they shall answer in this time, God sows, and I will sow her for myself in the land. Meaning, I'm going to put her in the new earth. I'm going to put her in this special place and be with her forever and ever. That's exactly what the prophecies of the New Testament predict in relationship to the second coming of Jesus. And I will have mercy on Lo Ruhamah. So we're back to this idea of Hosea's kids. God's going to have mercy on those that previously got no mercy because they weren't repentant. And I will say to Lo Ami, the name of one of Hosea's boys, now grown up, I believe. So I'll say to Lo Ami, Ami, you are my son, you are my people. And they shall say back, you are my God. And this is all, I think, related to the millennial period and afterward into eternity, when Jesus Christ reigns as King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and all his people are there with him. And there is no more fighting against God's compassion. Chapter 3. We have a little interlude here about Hosea's situation. Remember the last time I talked to you, I said I believe that Hosea was speaking to his grown children, pleading with them, you have to intervene with your mom. You have to get her to realize that things are coming to a head with her cheating and running around. She's not my wife. I can't be her husband like that. And so I'm going to have to divorce her. I'm going to have to throw her out of the house. She's going to have nothing because I'm going to take everything. Everything belongs to me that she has. And she's ruined our relationship. So I'm going to have to throw her out. And if that happens, she's going to be in a mess. Well, she did get in a mess. This next part of the story seems to be that Hosea did throw her out of the house, did take everything, and she goes out and starts selling her body to try to make ends meet. And even with that, she ends up going into debt and becoming the slave of somebody else. Chapter 3 of Hosea. He who is said to me, go again. Love a woman who is loved by another man and is an adulteress, even as he who is loves the children of Israel, though they turn to other gods and love cakes of raisins. So God, once again, is making this parallel, this overlay, between God's situation with northern Israel and Hosea's situation with Gomer. And God says, all right, Hosea, you need to go out and find Gomer. Yeah, somebody else has got her. Somebody else is having sex with her. But I know you love her. And I want you to go back to her. Because apparently he did. I shared with you at the very beginning of the story of this book. I think that he and Gomer probably grew up together. But he may not have seen her as a wife material because he knew she was kind of wild, even as a teenager. But God told him, you go ahead and marry her, even though she's going to cheat on you, because there are lessons to be learned here. But here, God says, you go and find her, just like I know that I still love the people of Israel, even though they cheat on me with other gods and goddesses. They sure love eating up those worshipful raisin cakes that are devoted to Baal and Asherah. So Gomer, Hosea, who I believe really does love Gomer, goes out and finds her. Verse 2. So I bought her for 15 shekels of silver. Now this is way back before coinage. So a shekel here represents a weight. But the value seems to be stable through time until they do make coins. So my guess is that each shekel is at least 2 days' wages, possibly more than that. So what we see here is well over a month's worth of salary. So over 30 days of hard work. And so he kicks that money out, 1/12 of a year's salary, to get her out of her indebtedness, along with a omer and a letek of barley. This is a weight and a measurement of grain. And so this has value as well. And Hosea probably had this as something around the house that he threw in to make up the deficit of what the guy demanded for the debt of Gomer to him. Pardon me. And so then I said to her, to Gomer, you must dwell as mine for many days. You shall not play the whore or belong to another man, and so will I also be with you. So Hosea pledges himself again to Gomer, says, I will be your husband, and you have got to be my wife. You've got to live with me, be faithful only to me, no more playing around, no more chasing after other guys. It's got to be you and me, Gomer. And this is pretty much the end of the story of Hosea and Gomer. We don't know any more about it. In my imagination, my hope is that she was so impressed, isn't the word, maybe touched would be the better word, so touched by the fact that despite, pardon me, how he had been treated by her all these years, he still loved her and sacrificially gave up a bunch of stuff to bring her home and wanted her to be his wife, that she repented. And they lived together and she learned to love him like he loved her. And so my hope that I'm expressing today to you is that one of these days in eternity, we'll get to meet both Hosea and Gomer and hear the rest of their story, how things turned out. That's my hope. But starting in verse number 4 of chapter 3, God turns his full attention on the situation between him and northern Israel in particular. And he kicks it off by comparing it to what he just told Hosea to do with Gomer. Pardon. For the children of Israel shall dwell many days without king or prince. So they're going to go into exile. Without sacrifice or pillar. So they're going to lose their land. They're going to lose their holy sites. Without ephod or household gods. Those are going to be taken away from them. And then afterward, the children of Israel shall return and seek he who is their God. So that gets back again to this idea. At some point in the future, descendants of those that go into Assyrian captivity, they will repent and seek the face of the true and living God. And I believe they'll actually do that through the form of Yehoshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Messiah. Goes on here that they will seek David their king. Now David is dead and buried. He will come back in the resurrection. Pardon again. But I believe that this is probably a representation of Jesus as the son of David. And that this is who they'll be seeking. The king of Israel, the true king of Israel, who comes to save them from their sins. So they'll come and they'll seek he who is. They'll seek David the king. They shall come in fear to he who is and to his goodness in the later days. So I believe that seeking starts with the Gospels. And it continues to this very day. That God is still calling many ethnic Jewish people to come back home to him through Yehoshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Messiah. Chapter 4, hear the word of he who is, O children of Israel. For he who is has a rib, a controversy with the inhabitants of the land. The word that gets used here is also used for the idea of a lawsuit, even a divorce decree, which lists out the problems that are resulting in this lawsuit, possibly the divorce. And so I think that's what this is about, is God serving the people of Israel notice. There is no faithfulness or steadfast love and no knowledge of God in the land. So here's my problem with you. This is why I am filing this divorce with you, against you, is because you're not faithful. You have no chesed toward me. You don't know me. You don't want to know me. Verse 2, there is swearing, lying, murder, stealing, committing adultery. Those are all straight out of the Ten Commandments as no-nos. They break all bounds, and bloodshed follows bloodshed. So they are just going whole hog, if you'll pardon the expression in this Jewish context, against God's desires. Therefore the land mourns, and all who dwell in it languish, and also the beasts of the field and the birds of the heavens and even the fish of the sea are taken away. One of the things that we know that happens because of sin is that the earth gets whacked. The earth has fallen into chaotic times because of sin. The animal kingdom has fallen into chaotic times because of sin. And so God brings that up as one of the points of this lawsuit. Verse 4, yet let no one contend. So that is file a countersuit is the idea. Let no one accuse, for with you is my contention, O priest. So, I have a problem with you guys who are in spiritual leadership. You shall stumble by day. The prophet also shall stumble with you by night. And I will destroy your mother. The mother here is, again, probably the nation of Israel as a whole. But the priest, who's supposed to be leading in spiritual matters, and the prophet, who's supposed to be passing on the words of God, they're just stumbling all over the place because they're false, they're fraudulent, they're fake, they are cosplaying, they are pretenders, they are hypocriti, they are actors. And so they need to knock it off, God says. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge because you've rejected knowledge. I'm going to reject you from being a priest to me. And since you've forgotten the law of your God, I'm going to also forget your children. So God says, you know what the problem is? People have lost the fear of the Lord, so they have no knowledge, because the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And you guys are the ones that are contributing to that as the priests and as the prophets. You're not causing them to fear the Lord. You're not causing them to want to know me. And so I'm going to fire you guys. I'm going to kick you out of leadership positions because you're not doing your job. Now, this reminds me of New Testament passages like 2 Timothy chapter number 3, where preachers were told to preach the word, be instant, in season and out of season, for there is coming a time when these guys are going to gather to themselves preachers that will tickle their ears. There's a whole bunch of people out there in leadership within the church that they only want to say nice things to the people. They want to only give the people what the people want instead of what the people need. And it's killing the people's souls. They are losing relationship with God. And so God needs to fire those guys. God says, since you've forgotten the law of your God, I will also forget your children. So I am going to be done with you. Remember, this is in the context of God divorcing northern Israel and kicking them out of his house, out of his land. The more they increased, that is, the people, the more they sinned against me. I'm going to change their glory into shame. The glory being how many people there are and how much stuff they have. And actually, there's a little bit more about the priests being involved in this sort of stuff. The more people there are, the more priests there are. And the more priests there are, the more stuff they collect to themselves, because they charge, you know, the people to do their priestly duties. That's why verse 8 says, they feed on the sin of my people. They're greedy for their iniquity. Remember that the priests got paid out of the tithes, but they also got extra pay by the sacrificial system. When somebody sinned, they came in to offer a sacrifice with the help of a priest, and the priest got part of that sacrifice for themselves. And so here's God saying, these guys seem to only be interested in the sins of other people where it benefits them. That it's all about their paycheck. Verse 8, and it shall be like people, like priest. You know, when the spiritual leadership goes bad, the spiritual followers are going to go bad as well. It'll be like people, like priests, and I'm going to punish them for their ways and repay them for their deeds. Yeah, they shall eat, but they're not going to be satisfied. This kind of gets into some of the Deuteronomy passages about the curses, that God was going to take away the blessing. So yeah, they might eat some, but they're not going to be satisfied. They're going to play the whore. They're going to play around sexually, but they're not going to multiply. because they've forsaken he who is to cherish whoredom and wine and new wine, which take away the understanding. They're all about partying, and it takes away their ability to think. My people inquire of a piece of wood. That's a reference to an idol. And their walking staffs gives them oracles. So some of them were actually making idols into their walking sticks, and then they talk to them on the way. For a spirit of whoredom has led them astray, and they have left their God to play the whore. They sacrifice on the tops of mountains, and they burn offerings on the hills, under oak tree and poplar and terebinth, because their shade's good. So they find themselves a nice little shady spot, and they turn it into a pagan worship site. Therefore, your daughters play the whore, your brides commit adultery, and I will punish your daughters when they play the whore. I will not punish your daughters when they play the whore, nor your brides when they commit adultery, for the men themselves go aside with prostitutes and sacrifice with cult prostitutes, and a people without understanding shall come to ruin. So God basically says, look, why should I target some of your younger daughters that are cheating, making you mad because they're cheating on the guy that you wanted them to marry? Why? Why should I punish that when you guys are actually engaging in the same sort of garbage, spiritually and physically? So all of you are people without understanding, and you are going to come to ruin. And so God continues to warn through the prophet Hosea, judgment is coming against northern Israel. You need to repent. Mark your place. We'll get back here next time God gets us into his word.